There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this awesome episode of Bench with Bubba, I just want to remind everybody, Listener League 2 is set up and ready to roll. There were questions people wanting in another one. The first one's full. We're about halfway full with Listener League 2, looking for 12 to 15 total. We have about 6 or 7 right now teams. Roto format, similar to TGFBI, will vote on a couple of potential stat moves, but we'll do a live draft online that works best for everybody involved. Also, the winner of the league gets a copy of the 2021 Fantasy Black Book and a guest spot, a guest hit on the Bench with Bubba podcast at season's end. So come check it out. All it takes is a rating and review on iTunes. Show me that you did it, and you're ready to rock and roll. Also, go check out the Fantasy Black Book 2020 edition, the 10th edition of the Baseball Black Book. I did catchers, relievers. There's tons of awesome stuff by Joe Pisapia and company. And right now, they are doing a Fantasy Cares drive. Proceeds from all the books go to Fantasy Cares. So go check that out. Fantasy Black Book. They're partnering up with Justin Mason and the Friends of Fantasy Benefit Draft Guide. All proceeds go to Fantasy Cares. So check that out. Give a rating and review for the podcast on iTunes. Would much appreciate it. But now, to Bench with Bubba, episode 251, with our good old buddy Draft Cheat doing Dreaming of Upside Part 2, round 16 for 30 in a 12-team NFBC League. Hope you guys enjoy. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 251. Going back and looking for some value in the drafts where we left off last week with Pete Christensen. You can find his work over at I screw this up every time. I apologize, Guru Elite, and on Twitter at Draft Cheat. Pete, how are we doing again, man?
I'm good. Happy to be talking baseball again with you, going over some high upside picks, kind of deeper in the draft. We did, of course, the pod with you last week, going over kind of the, you know, rounds first through 1 through 15 on the early round picks, upside guys, and we'll do kind of the second half of the draft. And you know, we've got spring training going on, Bubba, so it's it's an exciting time. You know, I work from home, so I kind of find myself excited for these spring training games every day, and then like one or two innings into them, I'm like, man, I just want the real thing.
Yeah, it's one of those things I tell people, if you can go to spring training, I almost prefer it 100 times out of 100 over a regular season game, because you're just chilling on the lawn, throwing some beers back, doing whatever you want to do, leave early if you want and go play golf or have dinner, whatever you want to do. Like, it's the most chilled baseball environment you'll ever be to. It's really cool. But yeah, especially this time of year, maybe in a bat or two from your big guys and they're already out. I do enjoy it. I've talked about it for years now when I record. I like having a game on TV, so like I have the Cubs game on where they're getting smoked by the Rockies right now, so that's always fun. But yesterday, one of like the random cool games, Dodgers-White Sox, you saw Vaughn out there, you saw Madrigal, you saw all their young guys playing together. That was pretty cool.
So,
yeah, I think, you know, spring training stats we know are not very predictive of regular season stats, you know, in aggregate, but that doesn't mean there aren't some things at least you could take from spring training. I watched some Joe Musgrove today, who he's been a guy I've been high on these last couple of years. He needed, you know, a change in pitch mix, and it seems like under the new Pirates regime, maybe he's going to get that. Was working up in the zone and then, you know, throwing kind of high, you know, curveballs that kind of mirrored up in the zone fastball. So there are certain things that you can kind of glean from spring training, but overall, you know, you never really know what players are just trying to work on things, which players are trying to actually achieve results. So you want to be at least a little bit cautious adjusting your ranks based on spring training results. That's for sure.
You have to navigate, like you said, the spring training results. The beat reporters are great at times, but they're also just as bored as the rest of us. Imagine having to write articles every day about the third string shortstop or something like that's going to suck. So you have to look into that, but you mentioned the velocity thing. Jeff Zimmerman from Fangraphs, he's got a couple of the mining the news piece every week, kind of keeps you updated on pertinent roster moves to keep in mind. And then he also does the velocity changes and like the Musgrove one will go on there. We saw Jose Berrios was going around 95 consistently. Yep. And that guy, you as a Twins guy probably saw that. And that kind of that gets me interested a little bit, like, okay, because I've always been a Berrios guy. Because I love pitchers that throw a lot of innings, because I figure if they can throw innings, they're going to, you know, get the counting stats. And if they just kind of hone it in, all of a sudden they put the ratios together 1 year and whammy, we got something. Berrios seems like he's always close. That velocity can be tremendous. Little things like that. But, like, what do you look for in spring? Because we kind of just beat around the bush about not kind of picking and choosing where you go. What do you kind of focus on? I know it's early, only like four games in, but what do you look at?
Yeah, I'm kind of mostly looking at mostly, I would say, like kind of like later round players where, you know, players that maybe I've kind of been in on for the last couple of years and they've underachieved, at least according to what I thought they could do in the last couple of seasons. You know, maybe I've got an idea for mostly pitchers, I would say, like a pitcher's pitch mix or a new pitch that they could introduce that would help them. And then I'm kind of looking to see if they're going to do that. I would advise most people to get subscriptions to The Athletic if you don't have them. In my opinion, most of the best baseball writers are kind of working their respective beats for The Athletic. It's really cheap. I think it's $5 or $10 a month, something like that.
It's worth every dollar.
It is. And you can, I mean, whatever you're interested in. Like, I don't know, like, at night instead of, like, my normal reading, I'm at this time of year, I'm kind of reading as much as I can from each beat writer on each team, right? So, like, news came out, I think just yesterday, that Clayton Kershaw visited Driveline, the famous, obviously, you know, baseball lab that does all the measurements, kind of getting people stronger. They've had good success having pitchers gain velocity there. Clayton Kershaw visited them for the first time this offseason. Kenley Jansen, Alex Wood were also there. Alex Wood, who signed back with the Dodgers, was up a couple ticks on his fastball velocity, something Driveline is known for. So, you know, there are some things to be found for sure. You got to be careful. Again, I would caution against going overboard on that type of news. And you have to remember, like you said, these beat writers, they have to write about something. Mm-hmm. And if a player doesn't have anything positive to say about them over an offseason of what they were working on, that's probably not a good sign. So I would express caution, but I do think, you know, if you are able to kind of read between the lines, I do think you can gain at least some valuable information there.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, The Athletic, I can't second that enough. I've been a member almost from the beginning, and I really don't care. I like other sports, but I don't read up on them. I'll read baseball stuff all day, and ever since they brought fantasy over, they almost do half the work for me. They have their beat reporters, like, give information to their fantasy guys, and they put it together for you. Like, it's a good setup, really good stuff. So I highly recommend that. There's been some, like, random recent news here and there, kind of got to sift through it and see what really matters. But the big one that dropped on Tuesday, about a couple hours ago, Brian Cashman of the Yankees came out and said, Luis Severino, going to need TJ. I was worrisome last week. I talked to some other guys. When you mentioned forearms, that's Tommy John. It concerned me when it's been bothering him since last November, October in the playoffs. That's really concerning to me more than anything. And now the news comes down, Tommy John, done for the year. Done for the year. You already have Montgomery probably pitching. You got Luis Siga as an option. What are you thinking with New York right now?
Yeah, kind of in trouble. I'm wondering if Boston is regretting trading Mookie Betts now, because obviously New York a little bit weaker coming into the season. You got the Aaron Judge kind of shoulder injury that's a little bit concerning too. So yeah, Severino done for the year. I haven't drafted any of him so far. I've been fortunate with that. This wasn't really a guy I was on at all, coming off basically a lost season last year. So we'll see how they adjust. They do have Domingo Herman coming back from the domestic violence suspension. I believe he's going to miss the first, I think it's roughly 60 games.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a little bit interesting. I've grabbed him in some draft and holds, a really good pitcher. And now, especially with Severino out, I think his rotation spot is, I think he would have got it anyway, but at this point, I think it's basically guaranteed he's going to get it after this 60 game. So he missed, you know, the first couple of months. That time will go by quickly, and you'll be glad you have him if you're able to hold on to him for that amount of time. So I think he's even in play now, you know, in 12 teamers. So yeah, he's interesting. And yeah, the Yankees Red Sox thing will be fun to watch going forward.
Yeah, no, it'll be a lot of fun to watch. Now, I like the part you mentioned, do the Red Sox, are they mad that Mookie Betts, they traded him, because they pretty much started throwing the towel with that move. And now with this Yankees, I'm looking at their roster resource, Garrett Cole, Tanaka, Happ, Montgomery, Loisiga, Johnny Lasagna, basically. That's their starting five. The Herman call's very good. And drafting holes, I think that's a great move to do something along those lines. It'll be interesting to see where they keep going with that, because, you know, losing Paxton, now losing Severino. Now, see, this is where reports in spring could be interesting. They're already saying Paxton's ahead of schedule. A back injury. I'm going to still stay away from that situation. How high is too high to draft James Paxton for you?
I don't know. I haven't done any drafts, I don't think, in the last week or so. So I haven't really seen where he's been going. I guess we could look him up here in recent online championships over the last week or so. Yeah, he's been going around right around pick 200. I think too high for me. Especially if you're taking, you know, I think I would rather take like, when's Domingo Herman going off the board? At pick, no, look like he's going at Domingo Santana there. And Domingo Herman is pick 350.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess maybe they are back around the same time. And I don't think the talent level is that different. So I'll take the flyer, I guess, on the guy going 150 picks later still. Pick 200, I think, too high for me with James Paxton, even at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just tough. Those back injuries are nasty. I just don't know how you can be back that soon. We already know he battles issues all the time. He's already coming into the season with an injury. Really don't like that idea. But originally I thought they'd take it easy with him because they had this slew of options, and now that's going away pretty quickly. So I still think they'll be okay because the Red Sox are going to be down, the Orioles. The Rays, you know, they'd be the biggest winners out of this. They might not have to play in a wild card game for the first time. Not saying they're going to the division, but it looks a lot better now. They have a chance. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. If anything, hey, here's your token. It'll get Yancey Eaton excited for the Rays season. But let's get into this value situation. It's fun. I actually pulled out the piece of paper from the last podcast. I wrote them all down for what we had. I won't read them off to everybody because we'll be here all day. But it was fun seeing the different value guys. And like Peter was saying, we are going to go round by round, 12-team leagues. We're going to start round 16, going to round 30. This will be 181 to 192, that section of ADP from February 14th, NFBC online. And we're both going to pick a guy, sometimes it'll be the same one, where we think they can definitely outperform this value and really help your team out in a big way. The way we compared it with DFS standpoints, this is like your GPP guy. It takes you to the next level and could be a make or break type player. So in this next range, Wilson Ramos, Carlos Martinez, Sean Doolittle, Justin Turner, Jake Odorizzi, Joe Jimenez, Kevin Newman, Keon Akella, Luke Weaver, Ryan McMahon, Giovanni Gallegos, and Hunter Dozier. There's a couple guys I like here. Who is your target in this range, Pete?
It's kind of interesting range where you're looking at kind of either speculative closers or closers that have the job on bad teams, right? So you've got, I would say Sean Doolittle, Carlos Martinez, and Gallegos are all kind of the speculative closer options. For the Cardinals, we don't know if it's going to be a Gallegos, if it's going to be Carlos Martinez, if it's going to be neither of those two guys. You've got Joe Jimenez for the Tigers, who I think more or less has that job on lockdown. I think he's a better pitcher than people give him credit for, but the team context is obviously pretty awful there. Keon Akella, I think, is a solid pitcher, but again, pitching for Pittsburgh, not ideal. So an interesting range here. The guy I chose as the most upside is actually Giovanni Gallegos. I think he's got a lot of risk here because we don't know if he's going to be the closer for sure. But I do think the Cardinals will go with you know, one closer like they, we saw that last year with Hicks and then with Carlos Martinez down the stretch. And I, for my money, I do think it is going to be Gallegos. Again, not a sure thing, but I do think Carlos Martinez will move to the rotation. I do think it'll be Gallegos in the ninth inning for the Cardinals. And he was fantastic last year. A lot of the, you know, advanced metrics for Gallegos were just off the charts. One of my highest rated skilled relievers from 2019, you know, pitching for a pretty good team and a good park and a, not a great division. Like, I could see a monster season for Gallegos. The risk, obviously, is that he doesn't get that closer role. And at that point, he would become more or less worthless, right? You'd probably drop him very early on in the season if he doesn't have the role. So he's the guy you could roll the dice with. I think he could return a massive value to you, you know, here in the 16th round if you're willing to take the risk on him.
And it, like you said, it's a massive risk, but we're talking back half of your draft now. We're talking a 12-team league. You're going to find more churning and burning on the waiver wire than a 15-team league. So the chances, you can take more chances, I feel like, in leagues like this. And it is interesting, you mentioned, because like Keon Akella, I think, can be really, really interesting. And he should get the job out the gate. Kyle Crick's always there. So they might trade Kella. You never know. I do like Gallegos a bunch. I think he might have the best stuff out of the group. I'm with you 100% there.
For sure he does, yeah.
You just never know what that Cardinals team's going to do. Like, in reality, I've always been a hater on Carlos Martinez because his arm never stays together. So in reality, a closer situation is the best job for him. Like, he should just be in the back of the bullpen, but they always want to start him. Doolittle seems worn down. So I'm with you. I think Gallegos is a really intriguing one, a real make or break one in this range. You went with the fun upside guy. I'm going to go with the boring veteran guy here. And I know you might not have like first round value, but I wouldn't be shocked, you know, seventh, eighth round value when things are all said and done. And drafting him in the 16th round is Justin Turner for me. This is a guy that is never flashy at all. But if you're looking for batting average help, he does it time and time again. 290 last year, 312 the year before, 322 the year before that, 275, 294. The dude rakes consistently, 21 or more home runs in 3 or 4 seasons. He OBP-wise is outstanding, a walk rate of 12.7 or higher in 5 of the last 6 seasons, a 372 OBP last year, you know, a 219 ISO. He's out over a 200 ISO for 4 straight years. His WRC plus has been outstanding. Everything you want from the guy is really, really good. He's just quiet because he's boring. He's going to put a stent on the DL. That's what he's going to do. 135 games last year. He had a really bad year in 18 with a 130, 151. You just got to expect, you know, 130 to 140 games of elite batting average production, 20-plus homers, and if he can somehow string it together, maybe even a you know, 150 games and you're golden. The barrel rate's always been there. The hard hit rate up to 43% last year. It's been as low as 37, so not great, but still not bad at all in the grand scheme of things. And he's going to be in that Dodgers lineup, which is not going to suck. It's going to be a very good lineup, putting up a lot of runs. So it's not a sexy move at all. It could be a corner infield play for you, or if for some reason you missed the third base position because you're going somewhere else. Justin Turner's not a bad guy, and if you already know he's going to miss time, you can gamble on another third baseman somewhere else in your draft, and you know, you mix and match and play that game with them throughout the season. But he'll be my guy in round 16.
Yeah, I love Justin Turner. And if this was, you know, a different show, like we're talking upside here, if we're talking just – which guys am I most likely to draft? Who do I have the most shares of in this range? My answer would have been Justin Turner. I've got a ton of him already. Like you mentioned, he's just a fantastic hitter. Like, he still is getting up in age, but he's not really showing many. I think like strikeout rate was up a little bit, but for the most part, maintaining his great ability. He can hit, you know, right in the middle. I don't know exactly where. It doesn't really matter in that Dodgers lineup. I guess kind of the upside with him is, you know, maybe he puts together a fully healthy season. Like, I know he hasn't, and there's a long track record of that, but I don't think there's any reason he couldn't, right? I know he hasn't, but I don't think there's a reason he couldn't. I think a couple of his injuries, at least, were due to hit-by-pitches, which I think he gets hit by the most pitches of anyone in baseball. So that is kind of a weird thing you got to look out for. But, you know, if he put together 150 games, he'd put up some huge numbers. So, yeah, I like the Justin Turner call.
So are you saying we should start prorating Astros players to Justin Turner's numbers?
Yeah, there we go. Justin Turner effect for Bregman and Altuve. I like it.
There we go. All right, go to round 17 here. Brian Reynolds, Omar Narvaez, Mark Melanson, Luke Voit, James Paxton. I'm pretty sure we'll both cross off that one. Carson Kelly, Fulton Nevich, Christian Vasquez, Andrew Heaney, Paul DeJong, Christian Walker, and Didi Gregorius. Some veterans and some youngsters here. What's your main target in this range?
Yeah, not the highest upside guys here, I gotta say. if I had to choose one for upside, I think I would go Luke Voit. I was pretty in on him last year for the Yankees. He was pretty awesome for the first half of the year. Hits the ball super hard. Then dealt with oblique injury for a lot of the second half of the year. Kind of cooled off, missed some time. But you know, while he is healthy, I do think he'll be more or less the Yankees' everyday first baseman. You could see some Mike Ford in there, but not sure. And, you know, even an injury to Judge or Stanton, and all of a sudden you're looking at Voit getting more time at DH at that point. So I think Voit has a path to playing, you know, 150-plus games for the Yankees, likely hitting, you know, fifth, I think, a lot of the time for that lineup, depending on who's healthy. He's a slugger. You look at, like, the barrel rate, hard contact stuff for Luke Voit, and he's great and can go to all fields in Yankee Stadium. So, yeah, I'll go Luke Voit with the upside play in round, 17 here?
17. Yeah, I like Voit a lot. The power is legit. He was hurt last year, so that drained on him a bit. But he won't be held into any region of that stadium, like you said. So, Voit, no issues with that at all. I'll be going for another first baseman in Christian Walker. Sure. I like him a lot with the Arizona Diamondbacks. An improved Diamondbacks lineup that should help him even more. In his first full season, 152 games, hit 29 homers, drove in 73, scored 86, hit 259, which for him, that's about what you're going to expect. But the part I like the most is he even stole 8 bags. If he can throw in, you know, 8 to 10 stolen bases to go with maybe 30 home runs, if things start to go right, I think there's a big, big upside with Christian Walker at this point. First base is that position where there's some really good top-end talent, and then it kind of just drops off. I found myself, if I missed the run up top, I'll wait on a Christian Walker. He's kind of a poor man's Matt Olson to me. Like, I love Matt Olson. Matt Olson's got like 40 home run power. I think Walker's just below him, but the average is going to be similar. The overall production, depending on 5 to 10 RBIs each direction, is going to be very, very similar to Matt Olson. So I think Christian Walker, with the 46% hard hit rate and that 13% barrel rate, could have another really nice season in Arizona, and he would be my guy in this
range. Very similar players, right? Voit, yeah, and Walker, first baseman with some power, some swing and miss. Both have some playing time concerns, right? They could be platoon. Mm-hmm. Both have some other first baseman kind of breathing down their neck. Like at first base, you know, if you're not performing, these guys could lose their jobs relatively quickly. I went Voit over Walker because of the additional chance to play DH, right? I think that's a little edge to Voit. I would agree maybe Walker has a little bit more upside, though. But, yeah, two guys, if you miss out on a bunch of first basemen early on, mm-hmm, I think these are two guys to take a gamble on in this range.
Yeah, if there wasn't the playing time concern with these two, because you mentioned Voit and the guys, the Yankees just have a slew of options. With Walker, you have Beers, who they traded for. You got Cron sitting around. So, and even Jake Lamb, unfortunately.
Yep.
If these guys weren't there, they'd be going three, four, five rounds higher probably. I'm not saying they're like they're elite, but that playing time is the reason they're downing. So
yeah, they will have to hit to stay in the lineup. I think we can say that.
No doubt about that. Heading to round 18, Gene Segura, Adam Eaton, Brandon Lau, Jose Urquidy, I think that's who you're going to pick, Sean Murphy, Marcus Stroman, Andrew McCutchen, Colton Wong, Joe Musgrove, Griffin Canning, Jorge Alfaro, and Joe Adell, who we've been told is not ready for the bigs, folks. He's going to start in AAA. Because that's baseball. What do you like in round 18?
Oh, man, I like a lot here. And this is one of the reasons why I do try to wait on pitching, because we get down to this range, and you guys will see that over these next 12 or so rounds. There's a lot of pitchers who I think have upside down here. Three of them in this round. Jose Urquidy, who looks like he is, I would say, unless things go, you know, very wrong in some unforeseen way, I do think he will start the year as the Astros' number 4 starter. Joe Musgrove, again, we talked about him right at the top of the show. Looks like he's going to have some interesting changes with the new Pirates coaching staff, which I think could really help him. I've always been a huge fan of his stuff, good stuff and good command. He just has not mixed his pitches properly, and also, yeah, just kind of a poor approach from him in Pittsburgh. But I think that could change this year. And then Griffin Canning, I love him too. So, pitcher for the Angels, looked good at times last year, kind of wore out toward the end of the year. They shut him down, but I think he'll be a full go to start the year for the Angels. So, man, I love all three of these guys. I think the most upside for me is probably Urquidy. The best team environment with the Astros, obviously, and some of his numbers for AAA last year, even in a hitter's environment, were just outstanding. So, I'll go Urquidy, Canning, Musgrove in this range, but these are three guys that I want in auctions. There's a good chance I'll end up with all three of these guys for, you know, $2, $3, $4.
Yeah, I don't hate any of those pitchers. Like, this range, I could draft a lot of my team just out of this round.
In I like general. Alfaro, too, as a catcher, too. But I got to leave him off with my three of my pitchers there.
Yeah, Alfaro is a great later-round catcher. Sneaky, sneaky good. Those pitchers are phenomenal. You know, Colton Wong's I'm always torn on him, but he's going to run. That's one thing you're going to get at that time of the draft. Adam Eaton's one of those forgotten outfielders that's boring, but it's going to be hitting – well, we'll see with the way they're changing the lineup around. Should still be hitting second, though. If Turner goes to third, Robles goes to first, that'll be a productive spot in the order. Gene Segura might get third base, second base, or both eligibility, and maybe he bounces back. There's a lot of interesting ways to go about it here. I don't disagree with any of them. I'm going to just pick mine, and it's going to be Sean Murphy if we're going major upside catcher for the Oakland A's. 10 home runs in 31 games in AAA last year, hit 4 home runs in 20 games with the A's last year. Hit 245 with the A's, 308 in AAA. His average is kind of fluctuated depending on his stops in the minors, but projection sites, they're thinking around 250. The projections are only giving him 97 games. I think he's going to get probably 130. He's going to be the guy in Oakland. From everything I read and hear, he's the catcher in Oakland unless he really screws up. So barring a catastrophe, we're thinking maybe 130 games. I'm thinking total upside here. And that'll probably lead him into close to 20 home runs, which in this round of the draft would be really, really, really awesome. And the counting stats would be there in a big way. So I'm going to go Sean Murphy. I like the Alfaro call. I've been taking him a lot of places. I guess I think Murphy, if we're going for major upside, I'd have over Alfaro. But the thing with Alfaro is, you know, he's the starter. He should play 140 to 150 games. There's really nothing stopping him. Where Murphy's going to still have a few maybe roadblocks if things don't go perfectly correct. But I'll go Sean Murphy with my guy.
Yeah, one problem I've been slightly coming off of Alfaro. He's been hitting eighth pretty much every day in that Miami Marlins lineup. You know, it's only been, what, 3, 4, 5 days of spring training.
It's still concerning, though.
It is, yeah. And, you know, that's with the less than full strength lineup that they've been rolling out there. Mm-hmm. So it does appear that at least for now, their plan is to hit Jorge Alfaro eighth, which I think is a mistake by them. But if that's going to be the case, you got to downgrade him at least a little bit, because I would have penciled him in for no lower than seventh, mm-hmm. maybe up to fifth or sixth based on their lineup coming into the year.
He was hitting fifth or sixth a lot last year, so that's really surprising. Baseball would move
him to eighth. We'll see that hold, but for now, it's concerning for sure.
Yeah, keep an eye on it, because, you know, usually, like you said, without all the starters there, you kind of move those guys up. Heck, yep. Mike Zunino was batting second today for the Rays. Exactly. They just wanted to have bats and get him out. If anybody should bat eighth, it should be Mike Zunino. But let's go to round 19 now. We got Nick Senzel, Abby Garcia, Joe Lucchese, AJ Puck, Masahiro Tanaka, Justin Upton, Mitch Keller, Jock Peterson, Brian Anderson, Ruki Odor, Dustin May, and Caleb Smith. There's a lot. This is, again, these last few rounds is why you can wait on pitching. That's for darn sure. What do you like in this range?
Yeah, another bunch of interesting guys. And, you know, just to kind of go back over it, like, the reason I think this is a useful exercise to do, like, you get to this point in the draft, you know, we're basically at pick, what, 218 to 229, something like that. Here in round 19, at this point, you know, at least in a 12 teamer, like, none of these guys can really hurt you. If they don't pan out, you can drop them, you can pick someone up off the waiver wire. So you really are swinging for home runs at this point. And I do think there are several in this range that could get there for you. Tough call for me. It would have 2 weeks ago, it would have been Dustin May, but it looks at this point,
that sucked.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to start in the rotation. I've got him on at least a couple of online championships already. Assuming he indeed does start in the minor leagues, honestly, probably someone I will cut before opening day, because I just don't know how long he's going to be down. And, yeah, we'll just kind of have to move on from him, unfortunately. So not him anymore. I will go with Avisail Garcia. The one concern with him, moving to Milwaukee, he's a guy who – hits the ball very hard. You look at exit velocities, barrels, even speed. I think he's in the 90th percentile of sprint speed. Avisail Garcia is. Now he's going to go to Milwaukee, by far the best ballpark of his career. We don't know for sure about the playing time with Garcia. Looks like for now he's going to kind of split time with Ryan Braun, which is a little bit weird considering that both guys swing from the right side. But we could see Braun play some at first base as well. And obviously, you know, we've got a month to go. Like, someone could get hurt in that Brewers outfield. Lorenzo Cain, Christian Yelich both have at least somewhat questionable injury histories there. So, yeah, Eversel Garcia, I think, has a chance for, like, a 30 home run, 15 steal season is dreaming on upside. But, hey, that's the title of these podcasts. I think he's capable of it if he got the playing time.
I have been an Eversel Garcia fan for years because the talent, like, well, you probably remember back, they compared him to Little Miggy because he looked like Little Miggy on the Tigers.
Yep.
And we've seen him with playing time be that guy. And you mentioned the sneaky good thing about him is that speed. He's actually, for a big boy, the boy can boogie, which is good to see. So I love that call. The biggest question, like you said, is playing time. I think Braun spends a lot more time at first base than people think. I know Justin Smoke's there. But I think in the end of it, they're going to want Abby and Braun's bat in the lineup more consistently. As much as I like Smoke, he's got a big hole in his swing too. So we'll have to see how that goes. My guy, again, lots of good options in this range. It's kind of a popular one, but it's hard for me not to like it. It's Mitch Keller. I'm a huge fan of what this guy did. I know his little stint in the bigs wasn't ideal, but his late in the year adjustments he made, his pitch mix change, I believe he's developing a curveball this spring and the offseason. That's something to monitor as well. When you look at his big stats, it's scary. A 7.13 ERA in 48 innings last year with a 3.47 xFIP. That's promising. In 103 AAA innings, 3.56 ERA, 3.87 xFIP. And he still struck out a ton over his times between AAA and the bigs. I've been using Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard thing a lot because I think there's a lot of interesting X stats and everything involved there. We look at Mitch Keller last year, just in his big league time, a 5.31 will bake him, but a 4.11 X will bake him. So there's a big drop off in production there. Strikeout rate should have been closer to 3%, not 28. His barrel rate should have been closer to 5.5, not 7.5. There's a lot of things pointing in the good direction for Mitch Keller. Once a highly heralded prospect, and we saw the changes Musgrove made. Hopefully Keller can make it with this new staff. I think he can definitely be like an SP2 or 3 on your team. You're drafting him as an SP5, 6, or 7, depending on how you draft your team. I think there's a lot to like with Mitch Keller, and he'd be my guy in round 19.
Love the call, and kind of goes back to what I said about Musgrove in that previous round or two. Mm-hmm. I think there's some upside with these Pirates pitchers. A lot of good stuff. Musgrove, Keller, and then maybe we'll get there eventually, but Chris Archer, another guy, I think at least has the ability to greatly exceed the production that you would expect from his draft position. So keep an eye on these Pittsburgh pitchers early on in spring training. I think a bunch of these guys could be good values come draft day.
No doubt about it. Let's head to round 20. Francisco Mejia, Nick Madrigal, Alex Verdugo, Michael Chavis, Yadi Molina, Tom Murphy, Austin Hayes, Aristis Aquino, Gio Urshela, Travis d'Arnaud, John Birdie, and Nomar Mazara. Heck, half of this round seems like they're catchers. This is an interesting grouping here. Which one gets your attention?
Yeah, easy one for me here. Nick Madrigal for the White Sox. Again, another, I guess, somewhat risky pick, mostly, I think, due to playing time concerns. We don't know for sure if he's going to break camp with the big club, given, you know, possible service time manipulations. We don't even know for sure if he's ready to be a big league hitter at this point, but I personally think he is. I think he was the fourth pick going off the top of my head in either 2017 or 2018. I think it might've been 2018. But some crazy plate discipline numbers from Madrigal, like truly, truly historic minor league plate discipline numbers from this guy. I tweeted this out a week or two ago, but basically, if you look at all players who saw 300-plus plate appearances last year in either AA or AAA, or, you know, you combine the two kind of upper minor league levels, he had a 2.3 walk-to-strikeout ratio. So a decent amount of walks, but it's really the low strikeouts that kind of propelled him there. I think the next highest was like 1.2, and there was a bigger difference between Madrigal and the second-place guy in between the second place guy and the 50th place guy. Like, he's just lapping the field in that category. A couple days ago, I went back and did, like, I think Fangraphs leaderboards in that stat go back to 2006. So last 14 years, he's by far ahead still in that metric. Other guys up there on that leaderboard, guys like Alex Bregman, Dustin Pedroia, some other kind of like smaller middle infielder types who their power's in question, but you know, at their peak, they're going to be a good plate discipline guy, high averages, decent power, good speed. I think Madrigal's upside is basically like a 300 hitter with 25 to 30 steals. I could see him making his way to the leadoff spot in the Chicago lineup. I don't think they have necessarily like an obvious option for that. So again, not saying for sure that any of that is going to happen, but it definitely could. And, you know, if Madrigal hits 300 with 25 steals, he's going to be a huge steal at pick, 235.
He's a great call. I like him a lot. He's one of those. I know when you drafted one of your OCs last week, it was right after our first podcast, and you said, you know, you take one or two chances, not many. That draft, I think you had Madrigal, Senzel, Joe Adell. Like, you went full on. I'm going all upside here.
Right. And I already know Adell's probably going to be cut early on. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's fun to see. And I agree, Madrigal has that ability, which we're talking about in this section of the draft, to make a big difference. I love the Madrigal call. The other guy in this range that I like quite a bit, and he looks like he's projected about 6 for the Orioles going into the season, is Austin Hayes. What I really like about it at pick 235 right now, you have a guy with 2010 upside, maybe 2515 upside. He hit 309 in 21 games with the Orioles last year, but project like a 260 to 270. I think it's something more realistic if he's really performing at his A game. But most importantly, especially playing in Camden Yards, 20-plus homers, 10-plus stolen bases. You know, most projection sites, ATC has 123 games. That's the highest amount of games. He's got it for 20 homers and 8 stolen bases. So let's just say 145 games, tack on another 4 or 5 homers, maybe number 3, 4 stolen bases. Who knows? I don't, probably not 4. It'd be half his games. But 2 or 3 stolen bases, we're talking 25-10. And that can be awesome. Really, really good production at this point in the draft. Be like your 5th outfielder in a 5 outfielder league. He hits the ball very, very hard. We've seen that through the minors and even last year in that small stint, a 42% hard hit rate, super small sample, but still very exciting to see, as he's been a high prospect for them and might finally get that run. So Austin Hayes would be my guy after Nick Madrigal in this area.
I like that call a lot. And actually, just paying too much attention to these spring training games early on, they've been hitting Austin Hayes, I think, leadoff every single time he's been in the lineup, probably all 3 times. So that would be cool with Hayes. And, you know, the Orioles, obviously, really nothing to play for outside of times, kind of seeing what they've got going forward. If Austin Hayes is playing well, if he's hitting, he's going to be in the lineup, in my opinion, every single day, so long as he's healthy, which is an added bonus, of course.
Yeah, they're going to be one of those teams. Like you mentioned, the Pirates pitching staff, the Orioles bats, if you just want to take some gambles late, like, you know, Trey Mancini doesn't go late, but like Anthony Santander has a ton of power, like ridiculous power, if he can hone it in. You got something like Hanser Alberto, just a middle infield kind of rangy guy. There's some interesting things, if anything, for DFS. They're fun and cheap to stack, I'll tell you that much. Let's go to round 21 now. Adrian Hauser, David Peralta, Luis Arias, Dylan Bundy, Sandy Alcantara, Mark Canha, Sam Hilliard, CJ Cron, Eric Hosmer, Sinsu Chu, Hunter Renfro. Similar to a couple rounds ago, there is a bunch of guys I like in this range. I actually have a lot of these guys, so I'm a big fan of this area. Who stands out to you?
Yeah, another bunch of guys I like. We've done too much research on fantasy baseball.
Pretty much.
We're ready for these big drafts to start. We're ready for the season to start because there are so many guys I like in every range. If I've got to narrow it down to one here, I'm going to go CJ Cron, I think. Mm-hmm. So he played last year for the Twins, had a monster first half, and then was dealing with injury for most of the second half. Again, I'm a Twins fan, so I followed them the most closely of any MLB team. That really slowed him down at bats wise and even production wise. But if you look at what this guy can do with when he's healthy, I mean, he hits the ball extremely hard. Barrel rate, hard hit rate, all that stuff, fly ball rate is extremely high for CJ Cron. Going to be the everyday first baseman for the Tigers. He's another guy, you know, if you told me at the end of the year he's going to have 157 games played and 640 plate appearances, and like literally all of them are hitting third, fourth, or fifth, I would believe it. I think that's possible for CJ Cron. And in that scenario, I could see him hitting 30-plus home runs, being kind of a key cog there. in that Detroit lineup. Obviously not the best lineup in the world, but yeah, I think CJ Krohn definitely has some upside. So he would be the guy, but I also like Mark Canha, Dylan Bundy in this range quite a bit as well in terms of looking at upside.
Yeah, for the listeners of the show that have listened long enough, they know I love CJ Krohn. Like, I wasn't going to break him down here. I wrote about him at Roto Baller last week. I love this man to no end, except he's on a different team every year. Blows my mind. But I think in Detroit, he'll be just fine. As hard as he hits the ball and the way he pulls the ball, you can hit a ton of home runs in Detroit if you pull the base. Yep. So no problem at all with that. People are blowing that way too out of proportion. So I'm with you there. I love Mark Canha as well. I think Sandy Alcantara and Dylan Bundy are very good values. Everyone always poo-poos on Shin-Soo Choo. I think he's just like solid production yep. all day long. My guy, though, this is another one of those, the Rockies got to get the hell out of their own way, but Sam Hilliard.
Yeah.
Like, this guy could be so good. Like, right now he's predicted to hit seventh in platoon with Ian Desmond, and the scary part is I could see the Rockies being dumb enough to do that. But if they just gave this guy reins, just like if they gave McMahon or Hampson reins, this guy's so good, and it's similar to Austin Hayes, but even better, this guy can run for days. And we've seen it every year in the minors, 12 stolen bases, 30, 37, 23, and then last year 24 combined in the minors and the bigs. He hits for a really solid average. He's got 20-plus home run power. Somehow Zips has him projected for 141 games, while everyone else is a lot lower. And in 141 games, 22 homers and 22 steals, and I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility if he plays every day. And it's just that kind of upside at this point in the draft. I'm a huge fan of power-speed combo, really good average, biggest problem, playing time in Colorado. But he'd be my guy if all things go right. I love me some Sam Hilliard.
Yeah, I don't mind that call. I'm a little bit worried about the playing time to start off, but not questioning the skills, not questioning the upside. I could see him being a guy that, you know, whoever drafts him kind of ends up dropping him somewhat early. Maybe he goes back down to the minor leagues. Maybe there's an injury or two to the Colorado outfield. And he comes up and goes like for like, you know, like 40 or 50% of FAB budget, something like that. I could see that being a path for Sam Hilliard. But again, you know, it's early on in spring. A lot can happen between now and the month before opening day. And it's a good time to take gambles on guys like that. That if they pan out, they're going to be awesome difference makers for you.
And we know there's a good chance David Dahl gets hurt. So we can get some Sam Hilliard time. If not, hopefully Sam Hilliard gets called up when Joe Adell does and everyone forgets about him. It'd be perfect.
Yep.
All right, let's go to round 22 now. Picks 253 to 264. We got John Gray, Ryan Yarbrough, Garrett Richards, Aaron Civale, Dansby Swanson, Shogo Akiyama, Miguel Andujar, Josh James, Chris Archer, Yanni Chirinos, Scott Oberg, and Anthony DeSclafani. A couple that really stand out here, Peter. Who are you looking at?
Man, I could make a case for almost everybody in this round as being the high upside guy. The guys that I actually have the most of on my team so far here, just to get that out of the way, are John Gray, who I'm a believer in. I'm not as scared of Coors Field as most people, probably foolishly so.
His home road splits are actually okay, which is crazy.
We talked about him either last pod or the pod before. I can't remember exactly, but he's a guy I like for sure. Also, Dansby Swanson, if you miss out mm-hmm. on shortstops early. Again, I do like the early shortstops. But if you miss, just know that Dansby Swanson sitting down here for you at round 22, going to play every day for the Braves. A lot of interesting metrics for him. Barrel rates, he can steal. He kind of slowed down in the second half, again, due to injury. But I could see a solid season coming for Dansby Swanson. So those are two kind of, I guess, safer plays that you could look at in this range. The upside guy for me kind of has to be Josh James, who fighting for that fifth spot on the Astros rotation. He was, you know, kind of in the mix last year, but got hurt in spring training. They transitioned him to the bullpen where he had a monster strikeout rate. Did struggle with the walk rate a little bit. Had an overall solid season, not spectacular, but now I would expect, unless things go wrong, him that he will win that fifth starter job for the Astros, which is certainly a valuable spot to win. You know, we're talking 97, 98 mile per hour fastball here, good secondary stuff, and apparently a revamped delivery over the offseason, which I'm interested to see and watch him pitch. So, I mean, Josh James for me has. I don't know, SP2, SP3 upside, as crazy as that may sound to say, I do think he's got that level of performance in him. I do think he's that talented. So this is a range where I really do like a bunch of these guys, but if you made me choose one guy who can get you SP2 upside, Josh James would be the guy I would pick.
Yeah, I love the Josh James call. It's definitely with the changes in that rotation that looks like he's going to slide into a spot there. It's outstanding. I was all in on him last year. I drafted him like the night before he got hurt. That was amazing. So much fun. But I believe the stuff is legit. And he's great. Chris Archer going right next to him. You kind of hinted at him earlier.
I like him,
he's
too.
Got some sneaky upside. Second half adjustments we saw with him. He even flat out said, when people asked what changed, he said, oh, I changed it up like I was pitching in Tampa Bay again. It's like, why do these guys change these things? Why? Why do you do that? So that was amazing. But so
the thing with Archer, he started throwing like sinkers when he went to Pittsburgh because that's kind of their MO. Like we saw Garrett Cole when he was a Pirate work low in the zone, which, if you saw him pitch and you look at the heat maps over the last 2 years with the Astros, basically a ton of high four-seamers from Cole. Archer should be pitching up in the zone with that four-seamer, and then and then the slider is his great pitch. I'll be shocked if he is not fully back to kind of the Tampa Bay mode right off the bat from Pittsburgh. So I think Archer could be in for kind of a vintage season, if you will. And then I do have to mention Aaron Civale, who I do think has a good chance to break out for Cleveland this year.
Yeah, he's definitely one. But mine's going to be one of the guys you did mention. He is kind of boring, but I love Dansby Swanson.
Yeah.
Like you said, you own him a lot. It's just hard to pass up on. People might sense a trend in what I'm doing here. If you draft it a certain way, you're going to need stolen bases later. And I'm trying to point out, guys, that I like drafting guys that kind of – they don't have to be massive speed guys, but give me 10-plus from everybody. That adds up a lot by the time your draft's over. So I'm a big fan of that. Dansby Swanson can do that. You mentioned he got slowed down with injury last year. They do have him projected to hit seventh, which stinks, but the improvements in his overall metrics are really huge. Like you mentioned, the barrel rate jumped up to 10% last year from 4% the year before. Hard hit rate jumped up to 42%. Strikeout rate pretty much stayed the same. Walk rate went up just a little bit. But his overall quality of contact was great. The injuries got to him. And when he did hit towards the top of the order, he was much, much better. For now, hitting seventh, which does stink a little bit. But if he can move back down, like you said, if you missed out on the shortstop run or you need a middle infielder, this is a phenomenal pick at pick 257 or 264, wherever you're looking. He's a big boy selection at that point in time.
No doubt.
All right, round 23, Wade Davis, Danny Jansen, Mackenzie Gore, A.J. Pollock, Yandy Diaz, D. Gordon, Emilio Pagan, Ryan Braun, Randall Grichuk, Brendan McKay, Buster Posey, Daniel Murphy. There's some sneaky goodness here. I'm guessing Emilio Pagan is not one of them. What do you like here?
Yeah, Pagan obviously traded from the Rays to the Padres. If you drafted him early, you're cutting him. Opening week, yep. I think, and just moving on from Pagan, even though he's a talented reliever, just can't really carry in all but the deepest of leagues a middle reliever on your roster. This range isn't my very favorite, especially compared to the last couple. Especially if you need power, though, here. I think Randall Grichuk is the guy I would look at in the outfield. Not going to give you the best batting average in the world, but it does look like he should be more or less the everyday center fielder for Toronto. He does have a lot of power. I mean, we're talking 30-plus home run power down here, down near pick 300. I don't know if there's a true breakout season for Grichuk coming, but I think he could almost get there kind of by default through plate appearances, through hitting in the middle of that Toronto lineup, which I do think isn't going to be improved. I think we'll see Grichuk hitting, probably fifth most days would be my expectation for him. And with the legit power that he has, I could see a 30 home run and maybe approaching even 100 RBI season. Going to hurt you in batting average at least a little bit. But, yeah, Grichuk, my guy in this range.
Yeah, for once, we're gonna agree on this one. I'm going to, at least for once on today's pod, I'm going Randall Grichuk as well. He's a guy I target another late power source, similar to your CJ Cron talk. CJ's going to hit a better average than Grichuk. He's going to hurt you in average. So if you're going to take him, just keep that in mind. It will happen, but should have an everyday role, should be hitting in the middle, like fifth or sixth at worst in that Toronto lineup. And when you want to talk hard hit rates and barrel rates and everything, he is a stack. And his strikeout rate's gone down each of the last three seasons. He just doesn't get any love because he's just kind of stuck in Toronto and people forget about him. But 30-plus home runs time and time again, at worst 25-plus. He's going to be a very good producer in that lineup. So in the 23rd round to have a 30-plus home run upside guy. Really, really like that. So if you want to go pocket aces like Toby does, you got some power and speed later in the draft with some of these guys we've talked about. Round 24, we get to Brandon Kinsler, Carter Kieboom, Starlin Castro, Nick Solak, Dallas Keuchel, Joey Votto, Will Myers, Ross Stripling, Steven Matz, Michael Kopech, Travis Shaw, Gregory Polanco. This is an interesting list, is all I can say. Quite an interesting list. What stands out to you on this one?
Yeah, we're getting down into some high risk reward.
A little gross here.
It is. So the Dodgers rotation battle is still kind of up for grabs a little bit. If we knew Ross Stripling was going to get the job, and obviously we're going to get clarity on that as we get closer to opening day, he would probably be the guy here. Again, he's not the most exciting guy in the world, but I do think, or if he got traded, I just think he can be a very high-quality starting pitcher if the Dodgers give him a chance, or maybe that Angels trade gets rekindled, whatever it may be. But Ross Stripling, always been a guy I've been high on. It just doesn't get enough starts to, you know, keep him on a roster, basically. So getting that out of the way, the guy I will roll with as my pick is Nick Solak, currently only eligible at utility for the Rangers, but it looks like he will break camp with the big league club. There's been some rumors that they're going to try him out in center field. I think Danny Santana still penciled in there as the starting center fielder, but looks like Solak could conceivably challenge him for that role. And if he wins that, you know, if he gets an everyday playing time job, I think he's got a lot of potential, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed to kind of play all over the diamond. So I think Solak could give you a pretty solid season here. Should get outfield eligibility, and then I would guess one other infield eligibility throughout the season.
Yeah, I love Nick Solak. That's a phenomenal call. A guy I've been drafting everywhere late. I love the eligibility there. I was kind of bummed when they said he'd be starting center fielder because I wanted the multi-positions, but it also locks him into the lineup, so I'm a big fan of that. Good power speed there. My guy, and it's still kind of hoping things plan out the way they're supposed to in Washington, is Carter Kieboom. If you can get this guy an everyday role, people forget he was once a top prospect in the system. They just remember that just rough 11-game stint when he got a shot in the bigs. Previously in the minors, you know, 290-plus average type guy. Really good 20 home run power upside. You know, could get you 10-plus steals. Playing in a really good Washington Nationals lineup. Even when everything was bad last year, still had a 43.5% hard hit rate in those 11 games, which, again, small sample. I get it. But when he put the ball in play, he put it in play well. So he's a guy I wouldn't mind going back to the well here. He's going to have currently only has shortstop eligibility. We'll gain third base as well, so something else to keep in mind. So at this point in the draft, it would be Carter Kieboom, Nick Solak. I like that a ton. And another guy, Steven Matz, isn't a pitcher I don't mind this late in the draft also.
I need to do a little more research myself on Carter Kieboom. Was he part of the Fabapalooza last year?
Yes, he was. And he was one of the ones that did not pan out, actually.
I think I'm like biased against him because I remember not being interested and kind of laughing at everyone who picked him and, you know, enjoying his struggles. And so I'm like weirdly biased against him where it's like I didn't like him then and now I think I don't like him now. But I think I need to dive back in there because it does look like the playing time should be there for him.
Yeah, if the playing time's it a lot. I think I'm lucky I missed on Fabapalooza because I was able to get guys like Nick Solak for cheap at the end of the year, and he was right. Tremendous. So there's something to be said about not blowing your money out the gate.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's go to round 25 now. 289 to 300. Daniel Hudson, deceased, Miles Mikolas, Ronaldo Lopez, Corey Dickerson, Renato Nunez, Jose Peraza, Dylan Carlson, Nico Goodrum, Austin Riley, Matt McGill, Michael Pineda. There's about two guys I like here as upside guys. Who are you targeting?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Dylan Carlson here. I've talked about him, I believe, with you and also on other podcasts. I think he'll be the everyday outfield left fielder, most likely, but really I could see him even filling in at center in a pinch for the Cardinals if something happens to Harrison Bader, if he can't hit, whatever. I just think Dylan Carlson is going to be a stalwart in the outfield for the Cardinals for years to come. Power, speed guy, high draft pick, has been really, really good in the minor leagues. They've been playing in a bunch already in spring training. I think he hit second today. I think he's at fifth in basically a full lineup for them. So they're clearly pretty high on him, a switch hitter. So he's not going to be platooned if he's up and with the big club. I think he's got a good chance to break camp in the opening day lineup, kind of depending on how some other things go. You know, he's kind of in a little bit of a battle with Bader and Tyler O'Neill, Tommy Edman in that mix, Dexter Fowler, I could see just not doing anything early on, and Carlson could take his spot. I just think there's a lot of ways for Carlson to get to the major league club and make a big impact if he does. So Carlson, pretty easy call for me in this range.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on this one because this range is not pretty, so I can't really go off the board here. The other guy would have been Nico Goodrum for his multi-position eligibility.
Yeah, he's kind of more of like a safety at bat filler, though, for me.
Exactly. Power, speed, late draft, all over the diamond. But Dylan Carlson's like that let's dream of upside like we talked about.
Yeah.
And before last season, he was just kind of this guy that nobody had on their prospect list, you know, hitting 240, maybe 10 homers. And then it just all came together. Hit 281 in AAA with 21 homers, 18 stolen bases. I mean, AA, got it done in AAA as well. Just continued to improve. And prospect guys have nothing but great things to say about him. Like you said, he should beat out these guys ahead of him. If he doesn't, he'll get rather quickly. And he's not costing you the Joe Adell draft price either, which is nice. So I'm with you on Dylan Carlson. I don't have much to add besides the upside's huge.
Carlson, I do try to avoid this in general, but he is one guy I am willing to draft. Even if they, you know, announce he's going to start in the minor leagues, as we get, you know, main event drafts that are, you know, done basically a week before the season, mostly, I would be willing to draft and hold him and hope that he comes up basically mid-April once they get that extra year of service time locked in. So Carlson, I'm high enough on him to kind of speculate on him in that regard.
Yeah, he shouldn't be down for too long.
No.
Round 26, Domingo Santana, Kurt Suzuki. Santana's going to keep going up, by the way, high as 202 in the last 10 days since he signed. So Santana, Suzuki, Cueto, Roberto Perez, Kevin Gausman, Cesar Hernandez, Dakota Hudson, Tommy La Stella, Seth Lugo, Trent Grisham, Ian Happ, and Forrest Whitley. A little more upside in this range, Peter. Which ones stand out to you?
Yeah, some good options here. For me, I think if you're looking for upside, it's between Domingo, Trent Grisham, and Ian Happ, three outfielders who I think all have a pretty good shot at basically everyday playing time. Looks like Happ might be the everyday center fielder for the Cubs. I guess maybe I would lean him as the upside guy. He's shown some good power-speed combo in the past. Cut his strikeout rate last season. It's kind of been a slow burn for him, right? You know, 2 years ago, this time, it looked like he was going to be an everyday player for the Cubs. The strikeouts kind of got to him. He had to spend a bunch of time in the minor leagues. But I think he might just be kind of a late bloomer at this point. He is climbing a little bit in drafts, but still, you know, a minimum pick over the last week or so of 250, not like you're paying a high price for him even in there. So I'll go Ian Happ over Grisham and Domingo Santana, but I think both guys – are solid options as well if you're looking for upside in the outfield. And then if you need a safe play, I do like Cesar Hernandez at second base. I think he's going to hit either leadoff or second or maybe sixth for the Indians, but they really don't have any depth in the infield. I think he's going to play literally every day, gives you kind of a little bit of everything. If you miss out on early second baseman, I do like Cesar Hernandez.
Cesar Hernandez is a great play if you miss second base or a late round middle infield. He's going to be so stable in the batting average, runs scored and everything, so I like that call a lot. Ian Happ, yes, the hard hit rate and the tools there are great. Just give him playing time, rock and roll. I like Tommy La Stella if you want to get really weird and try something there, but he's kind of in a platoon right now, so you got to watch out there. I'll go Trent Grisham. I think they traded for this guy for a reason. They got rid of Manny Margot's out of the way now. He's still got a weird platoon situation on roster resource, but I think more often than not, he's going to find playing time. And one thing I liked about him is, you know, in the past, not a big power guy. Between all the like AA, AAA, and the bigs last year, he combined for 32 homers and stole 13 bases. Now, I'm not projecting 32 homers at all, but give me 20. I'll take 20 at this point in the draft. Give me 20 to 20 and 10, 25 and 15 type upside in that lineup. They haven't batted fifth, which might be sneaky for RBIs with the likes of Fernando Tatis, Machado, Hosmer, and company in front of him. So he might be more of an RBI runs batted, you know, home run guy than runs scored stolen base guy. At the same time, at this point in the draft, he couldn't offer you stuff in all four categories. Batting average has not been a strong point for him so far in his career, but he could help you in all the counting stats. As a fifth outfielder on the Padres, I don't mind taking a gamble on Trent Grisham at all.
I like it.
All right, let's go to round 27. Moving our way through here. We got Robinson Chirinos, Cole Hamels, Blake Treinen, Jose Quintana, Gerard Dyson, Tony Watson, Alex Reyes, Brett Gardner, Cole Calhoun, Josh Lindblom, Kevin Pillar, and Anthony Santander. Very eclectic group is the way I'm going to say this one. What do you like in round 27?
Yeah, this group doesn't have a ton of upside for me. I'm guessing you're going to maybe we'll make the case for Jared Dyson, which I totally get. And I will say we're recording this on February 25th. So we're still a full month out from the regular season. And my pick here will be Blake Treinen. Honestly, gets a tiny bit less appealing as a pick. Every day we get closer to opening day and Kenley Jansen is not hurt. But for today, Blake Treinen is my pick. If we fast forward, 365 calendar days, 1 year ago, Blake Treinen was the first or second closer off the board. I was driving the Blake Treinen bus, which ended in a fiery crash. I think I picked him in the fifth round of my main event team. His stuff is just ridiculous. He throws like a 98-mile-per-hour sinker with crazy movement, a cutter, a slider. He's got a four-seamer. He just had no command last year whatsoever. I think he was kind of dealing with and pitching through injury, eventually lost his job to Liam Hendricks. But the Dodgers have enough faith in the bounce back to sign him to a $10 million deal, which is a substantial deal for a relief pitcher coming off a very bad season. The stuff was still there last year. The command was just completely gone. And if something were to happen to Kenley Jansen in the next month, which it could, shit happens. I think Blake Treinen would be the closer there. And I do think he has literally closer one upside in that arm still. So I'm trying to get him in the last or second to last round, a lot of my 12-team online championship teams. And ultimately, I recognize I will probably just have to cut him, before the season or week one, assuming Kenley makes it through. But if not, you might have yourself, a fifth or sixth round pick on your hands for basically no cost whatsoever.
I really enjoy the Treinen call this year. Like, I think Jansen's going to have his hay as well, but Treinen's one of those guys that we know the upside's there. Eno Saris has documented his just overall command being the issue. The stuff's always been fine the last few years, so it's just harnessing that in. It wouldn't shock me. We've seen it with a lot of teams. I think even the Dodgers spread it out a little bit more last year, but bringing Treinen in, I wouldn't be shocked if he still gets 10-plus saves, even with Jansen doing his thing. Like, yep. He could really be that guy that fills in, because Jansen's not going to go a lot of back-to-back days, or definitely not 3 days in a row. Treinen could slide right up. The Dodgers are going to win so many baseball games that the saves are going to be out there. So I wouldn't be shocked at all. Like, you could really – it could be a headache, but you might keep him.
If Treinen – if he looks like, and if he's pitching like the – I mean, just go look at his 2018 numbers. They're just absurd. If he's back to that level – you're going to keep him on your team anyway. You can kind of use him when, if you're in a dailies league, you can use him all the time. If you're in a weekly league, you can use him when, you've got a few of your starters with bad matchups or whatever. And then you're obviously kind of speculating on a Jansen injury or whatever. So yeah, he's a guy to keep an eye on for sure.
Definitely. So yeah, you mentioned Gerard Dyson. I do like him. I understand the skepticism. It's strictly you're playing for upside, obviously, and playing for 30 steals and praying the rest of it kind of doesn't bury you. I usually don't like drafting rabbits. This point in the draft, I can see it if we know as the season gets closer, hitting towards the top of the order, you can take advantage of it. Yes, I'm there. I think Cole Calhoun's an interesting play, but I know he really benefited from the bouncy ball last year. Josh Lindblom's a pitcher I don't mind gambling on this late. I mentioned Anthony Santander. But my guy is another boring veteran, and he's for the Yankees, and it's Brett Gardner. I know it's not pretty at all, but all this guy does is continue to get blasted because he's old. He's played over 140 games every year since 2013. He has 16 or more home runs in four of those 6 years, 21 or more in two of the last 3 years. He had 28 home runs last year with 10 stolen bases. He has over 10 steals every year since 2013. Like, he's continues to be productive. He hits 250 to 260 for the most part. He's going to help you in all four categories. And in reality, 260 is not even that bad in this era of baseball. So he's like a 4.5 category contributor in round 27. The outfield situation in New York, we already mentioned Judge is banged up. Talkman's fun and all, and no offense to Alex Chamberlain, but Is he really the guy to play every day? They don't want Stanton playing in the outfield a lot. You just got to think about all the situations there in New York. They brought him back, gave him some good money because he's a veteran and he's done so much for them. He's going to be productive. It's not flashy. It's kind of like the Justin Turner idea, but he has legit 20-plus, 25-plus home run upside with, you know, last year 10 stolen bases was his least. He had 16-plus every year since 2013. If he gets you back to 15 steals, this is a pick I like a lot at this point in the draft.
Especially if you get bonus points for banging the dugout with your bat. Yeah. You're looking good there.
Yeah, he is quite the I don't know the
language. He's a true Yankee.
Yes, I was going to say tool, but true Yankee could work there. But yes, trust me, because I am not a Yankees fan. Pretty sure you're not either. But no. Yeah, I know you're a Twins fan, but I can't even pull for him. But when it comes to fantasy, not too shabby.
Yeah, I can get it.
Let's go to round 28 now. Kevin Kiermaier, Willy Adames, Tejeron, Kyle Gibson, Sean Anderson, Mike Yastrzemski, Nate Pearson, Dellin Betances, Chris Bassett, Brandon Nimmo, Jason Castro, Jesus Aguilar. Depends on what gambles you want to take here, Peter, but there's a few of them.
Yeah, the gamble I'll be taking will be with my guy, Kyle Gibson. Let me down a little bit last year. Started off the year pretty strong. So he actually missed a lot of spring training with, I get all his ailments mixed up. But anyway, it was some sort of
stomach like flu or something. Bowel syndrome or something.
And then he missed time, I think in August or September, with a different stomach issue, but like similar, I think maybe related, like I'm going to mess up the pronunciation. I'm not a doctor. But in between that time, he had a stretch where he was looking really good. If you look at kind of the components that make up a good pitcher, he rates really highly, gets ahead of hitters, misses a ton of bats. His changeup and his slider in particular both rate out as fantastic pitches that can get a ton of swing and miss, a ton of chases, high swing rates on those pitches. So it's not just that, you know, hitters can't hit the pitch when it's offered, but they also just offer at it a lot. I think that can be something that goes overlooked. So I think there's a lot there with Kyle Gibson. If he can just get away from throwing his fastball so often, which just are not good pitches, they don't miss bats, they get hit hard. I'm hopeful with the chain. Like the Twins do have a smart, at this point, coaching staff. So it gives me a little bit of hesitation that they weren't able to unlock it, but I could still see Texas doing it. Obviously made a big difference for guys like Mike Minor and Lance Lynn. And I just see a lot of potential for Kyle Gibson. Also, bonus, I think he probably will get his first start of the year in that opening week against the Seattle Mariners in Seattle, which is obviously a nice place to pitch. So a good start should be for Kyle Gibson. And I still see a lot of potential for Gibson. So he's going to be on – he is and will be on most of my teams this year.
Yeah, that's Kyle Gibson's always been a guy I got no problem flocking to. So I like his potential, and pitching in Texas could be really, really nice. For me, I'm going to take the gamble on a bounce back with Jesus Aguilar, hitting fifth in the Miami lineup. Big-time power potential, 30-plus home run power potential if he figures it out again. You know, you look at his hit tool on StatCast, it's dangerous. You know, he dropped his barrel rate to 7.5%. Hard hit rate dropped to 37%. All these things are dreadful. But going into Miami could be very, very nice for Jesus Aguilar, batting fifth, like I said, everyday playing time, not having to worry about fighting for your job like he was doing there for a while. And if you don't like him, you drop him. But massive power potential. He could put up like CJ Cron type numbers a few rounds later. So that's something I don't mind at all. I would take a gamble on Jesus Aguilar. Let's go to round 29. Diego Castillo, Teoscar Hernandez, Yoshitomo Tsuzuko. Yeah, this is not my job in that part. James McCann, David Fletcher, Zach Plesac, Alex Wood, Franchi Cordero, Luis Urias, Kyle Seager, Ryan Helsey, and Pablo Lopez. Peter, we are definitely entering the end of the draft.
Yes, we are. I'll say that I have Kyle Seager on like almost all of my teams as kind of a 29th, 30th round pick. Just because he's going to play every day, he's going to hit third or fourth in that Seattle lineup. Once he kind of got going in the second half, if you look back like at his 2013 to 2016 numbers, it's like 25 to 30 home runs a year, like a 260 average. I basically think he's still that same guy, which, you know, at some point you're kind of just looking for at-bats. You know, maybe you drop him for a guy with more upside at some point, but I don't mind starting the season with him on my team. So that's Kyle Seager. He's not my pick for upside here because I don't really think there's much upside there to be had, frankly. For upside, interested to hear your opinion on this guy, who I'm going to make you pronounce his name again, Yoshitomo Tsusugo, Japanese import. We saw him hit a home run in spring training yesterday or a couple days ago. And you look at some of the highlights from the Japanese league, man, he seems to have some crazy power. We don't have any idea what the playing time is going to look like for him, right? The Rays are kind of the team that does the most mixing and matching and platooning and all that stuff. But I, from what I understand, he can hit lefties pretty well. And so I think he could potentially stay in the lineup almost every day. And I don't know. It's a little bit of just gambling on the unknown with Tsusugo, who I do think is a talented dude. So I don't really know what to expect from him. I don't feel confident in my projection for him. I'm almost hesitant to even make one. But gambling on the upside, at least for me, is kind of tempting there.
I think it's a great gamble at this point in the draft, because what's the worst you do? Drop him. We saw how well he – like if you just look at the Japanese numbers, those don't always translate, of course. But if you look at what we saw there, it's a lot to like when it comes to him. He's got power. He hits for a good average. He can play outfield. I think I saw third base, DH for them, which is going to be good because, like you said, they mix and match all over. The Oppo Taco he hit, you know, it was Monday, was really, really good.
Really so impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. I have no problem with that
game. That like one swing kind of is why I'm calling him out here.
But see, that's fine. At this point in the draft, you got to take some gambles and plant your flags on certain guys. So I don't like. You mentioned him. I was looking at Alex Wood. I've never been an Alex Wood guy.
Right.
He's probably not going to throw a ton of innings, but seeing his velocity up, it, you know, in the 29th round, why not? Like, really, why not give it a chance if maybe you get 15 good starts from Alex Wood? Like, really just roll with that. Franchi Cordero, somehow he becomes more of an everyday player in San Diego, which I don't think he will be, but maybe he does. That's a heck of a nice gamble in this point of the draft also. I understand your Kyle Seager everyday playing time. That's fine. James McCann's a guy that's going to DH a lot too, so keep an eye on him if you miss out on catcher. But I'll go to a guy, and I like Diego Castillo as a sneaky Tampa Bay closer. Just going to throw that out there too. But my guy, and it's going to be weird because we talked a lot of Blue Jays the first podcast. We talked Randall Grichuk, but we did say we'd stack these guys in DFS because they all can just drop bombs. But Teoscar Hernandez falls into this mix again. Back-to-back 20-plus home run seasons. He's almost Randall Grichuk. The average is not going to be great, but the power and the other categories are good. He's going to steal you 5 to 10 bases, which is outstanding. He's going to be DHing and playing the outfield. He should have some pretty regular playing time. His hard hit rates, his barrel rates are all great. He strikes out a ton, which is terrifying. 33% last year, 31% the year before. But the walk rates also increased each of the last three seasons, almost up to 10% last year, which is going to help him with stealing bases, just getting on that way, because the average, again, not going to be good. But that overall power production late, I don't mind it at all. If you ever just can, you know, it's one of those things. The reason I like to gamble on these power guys for upside is I know the homers are there. If just for 1 year they hit 260, it's like we always said with Joey Gallo, the numbers could be through the roof. Just give me 1 year where Teoscar figures it out. That'd be great. At the same time, I like your Tsusugo calls. There's some interesting gambles depending on what your roster construction needs at this point in the draft.
Yeah, I like the Teoscar call. Like you mentioned, very similar player to Randall Grichuk, at least in terms of the, you know, batting average, power, upside. The difference between the two, I think, is that Teoscar can't really play center field, whereas Grichuk can play center field or either corner. So I feel better about his playing time. But both guys have kind of unquestionable raw power. And like you mentioned, there's players, multiple players every year that kind of figure out the plate discipline thing. They figure out they need to be more selective. They change their approach. Some players get, you know, not less selective. They get more aggressive, and that's the difference for them. But you can't fake the power that a guy like Teoscar Hernandez has. You know, the guy can hit at 470 feet. There's just not very many players in baseball who can do that on a regular basis. So if he is able to figure out some things in terms of his approach, the breakout potential is there. So I like that call.
Yeah, most definitely. And one thing I guess we can figure out from a lot of my picks and yours as well is I'm usually not a guy that likes to gamble on like a bunch of late guys for my starting roster, but outfield's ridiculously deep. if your roster construction is fine elsewhere. It's a lot of, it's more gambling, so maybe not deep in quality of like consistent guys. But if you want to take a few risks, outfield's your place. There's a ton of it. Let's go to round 30 and wrap this bad boy up. We start with Samardzija.
We can pick anyone we want here, man. It's around 30.
Oh, there you go. I mean, you got someone up your sleeve. So let loose. Who you got?
I don't. I wish I had someone like super deep or something. But I was just thinking because I was kind of scrolling through.
That's true. You could take anybody.
Yeah, Oscar. Yeah, round 30 of your 12 team NFBC, your 12 team 30 teamers. At this point, you're just you're taking a lottery ticket, and there are a lot of guys to choose from. Who should I choose? I'll go with this Indians reliever, James Karinchak. I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, Bubba, but his strikeout rate in the minor leagues
is ridiculous.
Like, truly, truly ridiculous. I don't even have his page pulled up here. I'll get it up here.
Yeah, I only learned about him by doing the relievers for the Black Book, and I had to look at, like, potential closers and waiting, and this guy is filthy.
Yeah, so 24-year-old, 6'3", 230 guy for the Indians. In terms of, like, scouting grade, he's got literally an 80-grade fastball, which you never see. 55 on the slider. The command and control can come and go, but last year he pitched at three levels. He didn't actually throw that many innings, but rookie AA and triple A ball in all three stints, he had a K per nine over 21.
Like, Jesus.
You don't ever even see those numbers. It was only 17 innings at triple A, but literally 22 strikeouts per nine, over 17 innings, a high walk rate, like the ERA wasn't even that good. And then he only pitched five innings for the Indians, but he did have a really good success over that very, very short, very, very small sample size. I've seen some things out of Indians camp about their hitters. He basically has the velocity is really good, but he gets like really good extension. And then it's also got a super high spin rate, works up in the zone. And like even the veteran Indians hitters were just like, they've never seen a fastball like this. Like, they just couldn't hit it. So there's a lot of, I mean, it's a super raw ability. Like, the walks are kind of out of control for this guy. We don't know what kind of role he's going to have. But right now he is projected to be the kind of the seventh, eighth guy for the Indians. If anything were to happen to Brad Hand, who did slip a little bit around down the stretch, I think Karinchak would certainly be, you know, kind of a logical option for the closer role. And I mean, again, last pick in the draft, we're dreaming on upside. What's the upside for this guy? It's 30 plus saves and a strikeout rate that, you know, leads the baseball, something like that. So I'll take a gamble on this kind of freak pitcher here in the 30th round.
Yep. No reason to not do something like that with your last pick. Mine's going to be a crazy one as well. He's technically like the 477th guy on the list. He's been picked once since the 14th. They picked 355. He's predicted hit seventh for the Mariners. He's lefty Jake Fraley.
Ooh, outfielder. Like
this guy, again, another deep outfielder, shocker, but this guy can run and run and run. He had 33 steals back in single A. He's from the Rays, part of one of their many deals. But last year in three stops, he had 22 stolen bases, which is outstanding, and 19 home runs. He hits for a very good average. I've already seen him, you know, hit and run a bit in the spring training so far this season. There's no reason the Mariners shouldn't play him. Their roster is just garbage for the most part. So, you know, you got another guy that's interesting, Shed Long, if you want to go there. But Kyle Lewis, Jake Fraley, and Malik Smith are the projected outfielders. He might platoon with Austin Nola or Tim Lopes. I think he's going to play way more. Plus, he's on the strong side of the platoon. As a lefty, he should move up in the order, I'd imagine. It's just a very young, inexperienced team where there's going to be a lot of streaks going on. And if you want a guy with your last pick that legit has 25 to 30, still, like we talked to Gerard Dyson, I'd rather gamble on Jake Fraley, to be completely honest, because I know that he actually has power where Dyson doesn't. And Fraley also hits for average. If he just gets going, it's going to be hard to sit him on the bench. And he's a guy that drafted in your 30th round could legit give you top 15 round upside if he gets to play every day. So I'm a big fan of Jake Fraley, and I'm actually shocked he's only been drafted once in the last, like, almost 2 weeks.
This guy's been growing on me. I have to admit, I had, like, he had not really been on my radar at all. until a couple of weeks ago. I went on the Turn 2 podcast. A couple of your friends I know, Matt Williams and MLB Moving Averages. We had a listener question about Jake Fraley, which kind of caused me to dig into him. And man, I mean, the number, like he was just horrendous when he got called up to the Mariners in September. 41 plate appearances. His WRC plus is -5, which is it's like hard to do, but
very tough
in the minor leagues. I mean, he only played 110 games. I think he got 430 plate appearances. So not a huge sample there, but in 430 plate appearances in the minor leagues, he hit 19 home runs and stole 22 bases at Double A and Triple A. He's just 24 years old. He doesn't really have a roadblock from the Mariners, right? Like Malik Smith is Kyle Lewis. Like this guy is the one that you would think they would give a chance to if he's playing well. Like could be platoon, but like you said, strong side. And if he's hitting, you would think they would let him maybe learn against lefties. Because just looking at his profile, like you mentioned, he seems like the guy who has the most long-term potential for the Mariners. So
yep.
I like this call a lot. Again, like I think there's a chance he gets 600-plus plate appearances and hits at the top of the lineup for the Mariners all year long, steals you 20-plus bases. Man, the upside is there. And, you know, don't be afraid in your 30th round to just – bypass 150 players and take this guy as your last pick.
I honestly, if you feel comfortable with your roster, I'd jump a couple more rounds earlier because I think this name's going to start going out there more and more. And it's going to be one of those.
If he hits it all in spring, he's going to move up quickly, I think.
Yeah, you think you're being cute waiting on him for round 30 and someone's going to snipe you. I just know it's going to happen. So sure. If you really want him, because I'm with you, I think the upside is legit. So
yeah, we'll just in general, once you get down to rounds like I would say even like rounds 26, 27 through 30. Mm-hmm. At that point, I don't really care about ADP at all. I'm literally just taking whoever is the guy I want most with my next pick.
And it goes back to the churning and burning strategy. Like you're going for upside. If it doesn't work, just move on. Very simple stuff here. We had one listener question from last week. And so I want to get to it since I totally forgot about it once we finished recording last week. And it's from @manchunk, chunk man. This is for you, because it'll be interesting to get your perspective on this. How are you approaching 2020 from a power perspective? Are you anticipating a different baseball?
Yeah, I am, I think. But again, we don't know. Nobody knows. I don't know if the Major League Baseball teams or managers or players themselves know. I'm guessing not. They've kind of denied that they had baseball, like Major League Baseball denies that they have control over the production of the baseballs, and there's just like a range, like an acceptable range for like the seams to be. It seems like the seams of the baseball were different last year. Like they were lower, and so it caused less drag on the baseball, so the ball flew further. From what I understand, that's what caused kind of the power spike. And we just don't know what kind of baseballs we'll see in 2020. But I do think the most likely outcome is that we won't see, you know, the most juiced baseballs we've ever seen, which was last year. So I do think we'll see more of a moderate baseball like we saw in 2017 or 2018. And I do think you'll see slightly fewer home runs. I don't think we're going to see a big reduction. And, you know, some players, you can look up stuff like average fly ball distance. You can look up stuff like barrel to home run rate. And if you get players that are, you know, like a Jeff McNeil, I think he hit 23 home runs on just 21 barrels. I think players like that could potentially regress in terms of home runs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I saw one reporter, Dan, if you want to go back to The Athletic, a beat reporter was asking pitchers, I forget for what team now, what their thoughts were on the baseball after using them for a couple weeks. And they said it feels more like the 2018 baseball. Like they have no idea. There's nothing for certain yet. But they're feeling like a 2018 baseball.
Just completely. Also, an anecdotal thing, just watching a lot of spring baseball early on, it does feel like I have seen some home run type swings from, you know, hitters that I know have power that have not been going over the fence like I kind of expected them to. Again, we're just all speculating here, so that's all it is. But based on what I've seen over these last 3 or 4 days, that would kind of reinforce that opinion.
Yeah, so wait and see. But Peter, what are your final thoughts? Any final thoughts on this whole upside discussion we've had over the last couple of weeks? Because it'd be fun to see a team like this and see how it actually played out.
Yeah, I've got some online championships drafts coming up, so maybe I'll try to pull one of these drafts off where I take 15 or 20 of my guys off this list. I'll throw in some of your favorite guys and see where it ends up. I don't think that's the best strategy in the world. I think you got to draft some safety, especially early on. But again, the further you go down the draft, I think the more you want to kind of swing for the fences with your picks.
Yeah, honestly, like for the listeners that have listened to the first part of this and now this part, I would take a lot more of these guys than the first guys. That's just my two cents. Because I like getting my stability early. Yep. And gamble towards the end here. Have some fun with it.
Absolutely.
But definite upside, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we discuss one of these days down the road. It's been a pleasure chatting it up with you. But before we leave, plug away what you got going on. You mentioned, I don't know if it's anything's out there, but you mentioned a lot of stuff you're working on or what else you got going on right now.
Yeah, kind of a lot of stuff in the works at the moment. So stay tuned. I think the best way to kind of keep track of what I'm doing, just follow me on Twitter at DraftCheat. Hoping to do some more podcasts, probably on my own platform, obviously doing some collaboration with you, Bubba, and other people too, some Twitch stuff. So there'll be a lot coming out from me over the next couple of weeks for sure. So stay tuned for that.
Looking forward to it. I'll be waiting to see what it is, and we'll definitely have you on frequently because I've had fun chatting with you, picking your brain, getting a good, smart opinion on a bunch of players. So it's always a good thing to do besides just the standard, positional things that everybody else does. So it's good to make up a little bit, but everybody go check him out on Twitter at DraftCheat. Very awesome follow for sports, fantasy, and everything else in between. But this was Bench with Bubba, episode 251, Dreaming of Upside, part 2. Catch you guys later.
This is Sean Green from the Sports Gambling Podcast, and in case you didn't know, the show you're listening to right now, as well as my show, the Sports Gambling Podcast, is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Blue Wire was founded in 2018 on the concept that independent podcasts would be more successful if they worked together. Today, Blue Wire has grown to feature 300 shows led by former athletes, media professionals, and passionate fans, plus guys like me who just love betting on sports. Over the past few years, Blue Wire has privately raised over $10 million to expand their team, podcast network, and business operations. Now they are raising another round on WeFunder. WeFunder is a crowdfunding source that connects startups with investors. It's a cool platform that gives everyone the opportunity to be part of a growing startup. You can invest for as little as $100. In other words, you don't have to be a millionaire to invest in cool companies on WeFunder. I can vouch for Sports Gambling Podcast and our Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Our partnership with Blue Wire has really been vital to us growing. Kevin and his team do tremendous work over there. So Blue Wire is raising money to expand their sales team and improve operations, which in turn will help this show and many like them continue to grow. If you'd like to be part of the Blue Wire investment round or want to find out more information, go to WeFunder.com/BlueWire.